Well, hey, kids, this is Howard Kalin here, that good-looking bearded guy from the Turtles and the Mothers of Invention. And you're listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party here on Pantheon Podcasts.
Welcome to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party, a Pantheon podcast. Music, culture, conversation, and good old-fashioned rock and roll. So now, I give you Miss Pamela and her pajama party.
Hello, dolls. You are listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am known kind of as the world's most famous groupie, but really I'm also an author. I have several books out. Hopefully you've read some of them. Today I was actually interviewed on a show on Reels about Keith Moon. I'm always a talking head. People always want to have me on their show, and aren't you lucky? You get to hear me whenever you want to, and you don't even have to pay. Isn't that something? I want to tell you about one thing about myself. I have a new YouTube channel, so please, please tune in. You are listening to a Pantheon podcast. We have so many fabulous podcasters, like 60 or 80. I can't keep track of it, and it's all music related. So welcome to Pantheon. Welcome to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party. And today I have a very special guest, and I know I always say that, but this guest is very, very special to me. He's a very dear friend. His name is Kip Brown. He has been in different bands in his life. He was in a punk band called Shock. And Kip, what would you, is it Little Girls? Is that also punk?
No, it's pop.
Pop. He was in a pop band called Little Girls, and we're going to hear some of that music today on the show. And he's also my James Dean buddy. So we're going to be discussing our obsession with James Dean. And he's my driver for my rock tours. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. And I would like to welcome Kip Brown. Hi, Kip.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
Kip is here. It's wonderful. I call him many names. He has many names, but Kipper is the main one I use.
Yes, I appreciate it.
So here he is on my couch. We're not in our pajamas. We really should be, Kip, but we're not. This is a pajama party. So I would like to introduce the people to you. Tell me about how you got into music. He's a California SoCal dude, right?
Yeah, born and bred.
Yeah.
Born in Burbank across from Disney Studios, raised in Woodland Hills. And my first pop memories are seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
The very first one. Yeah.
And you were very little.
I was very little. I was like, seven maybe?
And you remember seeing?
Oh, I totally do. Yeah. I remember seeing the ads coming soon, the Beatles. I was like, who are these guys?
Huh.
And then when
even
I saw
at that age.
Oh, yeah. Saw the girl screaming and I go, I want to be that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I tell you how many times I'd lay in bed and go, God, I want girls to scream for me.
Who doesn't, right?
Exactly. I still want that.
I want girls to scream for me.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that's, you know, and listening to KHJ radio all during the 60s, you know, I was totally into all of that pop music and yeah, Beach Boys.
When did you actually start deciding to actually play music?
About 69, mm-hmm. when I got a guitar and I took lessons.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think the first songs I was learning were like Creedence Clearwater songs, and
of course.
The Beatles from Abbey Road.
Nice. And, and you were, what, 12 or something?
No.
14?
Yeah, you're right, 12, 13. Yeah. You know more about me.
So did your parents get you the parents got you the guitar?
Yes, they did. Woodlow Music in Ventura Boulevard. Yeah.
That is real.
I love this guitar. And unfortunately, it's one of the guitars that got stolen from me about 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Bummer. How can people do stuff like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Crushed yeah. me. But yeah. So then I just wanted to be in a band, but how do you do that?
Yeah, how did you do it?
I didn't do it for quite a while until after high school. All my friends were in bands in high school, but I was a slow bloomer. Yeah.
Slow bloomer.
Yeah.
That's good. Better than being late bloomer.
Yeah, late bloomer. I was a late bloomer. But yeah, so around the punk time, I met some people at the record store I worked at. Licorice Pizza, mm-hmm. very famous store in mm-hmm. the Valley, all over LA, actually. And met these fellow like-minded people who were into this new music that's coming out called punk rock. And so we started rehearsing and writing original songs.
Wow.
And actually,
cool.
Steve wrote most of them, but he's our bass player. And
you started getting gigs?
Started getting gigs, yeah.
Who named you Shock?
I did.
Such a good name.
Yeah. We were all trying to think of names driving down the street. Sataquai, I think it was. We were driving to a rehearsal one day at our singer's house.
He's a Valley boy.
Yeah. And we're all coming up with names. And I said, what about Shock? And we just all looked at each other. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
What were some of the other names you threw around?
I can't remember.
No?
Oh, no, I don't. That's so long ago. Yeah.
So what was your first gig?
First gig was in our manager's backyard. He lived in Santa Monica in an old apartment complex overlooking the ocean. Nice. And it was owned by Fatty Arbuckle, allegedly. Oh, silent film star,
yeah,
you know,
that
got in trouble.
I'm very interested in Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah.
He was innocent.
Yeah, yeah. So rumor was he owned this place, and we played outdoors 4th of July, 1976. So, you know, bicentennial.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had our first, our manager at the time, he lived in that building. He likes to say we had our first groupies there. They were all like sitting on the lawn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But it was fun. We had a good time. I have pictures of it.
And you got a record deal?
We started playing some gigs. Started moving up in the chain.
Yeah.
And so we played this.
How does that work? Tell everybody what it means to move up the chain when you're in a rock band in Hollywood.
Well, you start playing like really divey places.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you kind of graduate to better dives.
Yeah.
But we played this thing. There was a benefit for The Mask, which was this punk club.
Yeah, yeah.
Basement punk club in Hollywood. And that was a great night. Two nights. We were on the second night. And, you know, the Germs and all of these punk bands, the Weirdos.
Yeah.
They're all like legendary bands now. Yeah, in LA scene. And so we played our gig, and we walked amongst the crowd afterwards, just hanging out and watching the other bands. And this guy approached us, and he says, I'd like to do a record with you guys. And his
nice.
Name was Danny Holloway.
Yeah.
And he produced the Plimsolls. And anyway, it was awesome. He took us into the studio, and we did that first record, which was This Generation's on Vacation, plus two other songs, and on red vinyl. Very cool.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And that's now considered a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people are collecting you now, right?
Yes. And matter of fact, we just got an invitation to be on this box set, mm-hmm. 5-CD box set on Cherry Red Records, mm-hmm. Called The History of North American/Canadian Punk Rock.
Great.
Yeah. So that's.
Why don't we hear one of those songs right now? Which one would you like?
Well, let's play the big one. This Generation's on Vacation.
Okay,
and I
great.
Play the guitars.
Yay.
And sing the background vocals with the other guy.
Let's go.
Wow, Kip, that is so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great production, you know.
Yeah. Proud of that. You're proud of it.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So you did another record too, right, with them?
We did another record. That wasn't as good. Danny Holler wasn't involved, and we were kind of in the process of breaking up. There was a lot of inner fighting and, you know, all the bullshit. That's oops, excuse me.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But why does that happen?
Well,
I mean, that happens with so many bands.
Egos and stuff. And but, you know, things started, we weren't moving up. We wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to mention, though, we did open for the Ramones.
Yes, I wanted to ask you some of the gigs you played.
Yeah, that was a big night for us. We played two nights with the Ramones, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
Wow.
At the Whiskey. It was just us and the Ramones. And we had an option. They said, you can open for the Ramones or this other band that's coming to town. And I'd heard of them, but none of the guys in the band had heard of them.
Yeah.
And that was the Police.
Oh,
yeah, for their first
the
shows. But I'm glad we picked the Ramones.
Yeah, it was more in keeping with their music.
Yeah, not to mention they're cooler.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was awesome. We did those two nights, and that was fantastic.
But you also played with lots of bands around town. Didn't you like play with the Weirdos and the Germs and
the Whiskey.
So knowing you the way I do, pretty well, I try to imagine you as a punk.
Well, we all had jobs, though. That was what's funny. We saw all these other punk rockers who were just like,
you know, starving.
Starving.
So you might as well not
exactly.
starve.
We all worked. Yeah. And we were nice guys. And we smiled. Yeah. But So it was fine. Yeah.
Okay.
But we didn't fit in a lot of times with these, the cliques. There were cliques, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of the punkers hated us because we knew how to play our instruments.
Yeah. Oh boy. No,
but anyway, we got cut to like 2007. Brendan from the Mullen. Mask.
Yeah. He was one of Mercy's main squeezes.
Yeah, so he had a reunion of all the punk rockers to play the Mask, like another benefit show or a tribute show.
Yeah.
And he saw me at a record store and he invited us. And I tried to convince the band members. They all were spread around the country. And I said, we got to do this. We might get respect now.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that's what happened.
Oh,
people kept coming
that?
Up to us. This was 2007.
Oh.
And they kept coming up to me afterwards. And they said, you guys are one of the best of the night. Well, I was like, wow. And they go, you sounded like you rehearsed. And I go, we did.
you aren't supposed to rehearse if you're a punk.
Right? Yeah, well. Anyway, it was good. Good night. It was a good night.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. And then.
Then I left the band.
Yeah. Okay. Continue from there.
Left the band because of the inner fighting. And then took a few months off, went to Canada with my family. And then my friends took me to go see this pop band at the Troubadour called the Little Girls because their friend, our mutual friend, was on bass, a guy named Vince. And I just thought, wow, this is really fun. They're having fun on stage. They're two girls, sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why the name. And they write pop songs. And I thought, well, this looks like fun. And coming from a shock who towards the end, we were kind of like, it wasn't fun anymore.
Right.
I go, well, I'm going to do this. So anyway, I told Vince afterwards, we spoke to him and I said, if you ever need a guitar player, give me a call. And then about a month or two later, he called. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that went on for a long time.
That went on for a long time. And we did a mini album and we did a video for MTV.
Oh.
And we had a song, which we'll play, called the Earthquake Song. And that every time there's an earthquake in L.A., they play it on K-Rock and what have you.
Well, let's play it now, but really hope there's no earthquake that stems from it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, here's the Earthquake Song.
There's gotta be an earthquake in this town. There will be houses falling down. The fire hydrants will blow up. The streets will crack, the pipes will pop. It's gonna kill my mom and dad. They are the only folks I had. But they'd better not blame me, cause it's not my fault. It's always
right. So that's really, to me, more in keeping with your style.
Yeah, it's pop, you know, and my surf.
Yeah.
So I'm playing the guitar on that as well.
Yeah. Now, do you still play guitar?
I do, but my whole thing now is recording. And you should know because you're on one of my records.
Yes.
After the Little Girls broke up, I played in a few other little bands, but I wanted to do I like Christmas music.
Yeah, me
and
too.
So I wrote the style of like the Go-Go's Meet the Beach Boys. Yeah. And it's called Surfing with Santa. But anyway, I did a record of that, and it's under the name The Holly Berries.
Right.
And so I basically took control of all of this because I wanted to write it. I wanted to produce it. I wanted to release it. I wanted total control of it. And you were nice enough to be on my second record, I think it was.
Jingle All the Way.
Right. So I released one a year for 4 years.
And they get played a lot at Christmas, right?
Yeah.
I know Kip's goal is to have it be a Christmas standard. Yeah. That every year
it did play. That first one, Surfing with Santa, did very well. It was picked up for Alamo Draft House, you know.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
used it for their commercials.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, that was cool. That's a theater in Austin, Texas.
Well, based there, and there's one in LA, and there's one in New York.
Where's the one in LA?
Downtown LA. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been to the one in Austin.
Yeah, whole chain of them. But cool. Yeah, they used it for their December coming attractions a couple years in a row.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the night in 1974 when you first met me.
Yeah, that was I was a big fan of. First of all, I knew who you were because of the GTOs, and I'd read about you and like whatever Phonograph Record or one of those newspapers.
Cream.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Saw your picture with Alice Cooper, who I was a big fan of as well. And then I was a big fan of the Silverhead. And so they were playing the Whiskey, and I went to the Whiskey to see them. And as I used to do back in those days, I'd go by myself and bring a little camera along with my little flash bulbs. And went backstage because it's easier to get backstage if you're by yourself. Yeah.
Huh, really?
Yeah. And there
I
you were.
I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, expert at that.
Yes. I was. It's not the same, is it, Kip?
No.
It's not as easy to get backstage. My God, we could just walk back there usually.
Yeah, it was pretty easy back in those days.
And especially if you knew where the back stairs were, the Whiskey and all the whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you did because you played there.
There was never any guards leading up the stairs, you know. Yeah. Just go up there. But most people were afraid to.
Yeah. Well, they didn't even think about doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I talk about on the rock tour with you as my wonderful driver.
Yes.
And cohort.
Yeah, we have fun, don't we?
Yeah. I talk about how the G word groupie didn't even exist and you could just knock on a door and they'd open it. Those were the days, right?
How did you meet Michael?
I was doing a movie.
Michael DeBar.
Yeah, Michael DeBar. That's how I got my beautiful name. I was married to Michael DeBar for 14 years.
Lead singer for Silverhead.
And many other bands.
Yes.
Detective and Checkered Past. He was a guest, of course, on my podcast.
Of course.
Yes.
I would hope so.
We have a son, Nick. But I met him on a movie, playing myself, but Keith Moon didn't show up. And of course, we had to scour New York. It was filming in New York. We had to find a musician who could act. And Michael was perfect. He'd been a child actor. He was also in Sir with Love. And he came aboard on his 26th birthday and took the Keith Moon's role, and he stole the movie. Wow. He really did.
Well, he had that expertise and what he was into Sir with Love.
Yeah. Because he was a really good actor. He still is. He went on to do so much TV in
Murdoch.
Yes, he played Murdoch in MacGyver.
Yeah.
And he was in the Smelly Car episode of Seinfeld, which they play all the time.
He still gets royalties for that.
He probably gets $15 or something now when that airs.
That's cool.
So that night you took a picture of us.
Yeah. You guys were, you were in your underwear.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, Kip saw me in my underwear.
She was ahead of her.
Way before Madonna.
Yes. Way before Madonna. So I have proof. And I took two pictures of them standing outside of the dressing room door. And so cut to years later, you and I did a radio, a TV show.
A TV show.
With Little Art's Poker Party.
Yes.
With our buddy, Art Fine.
Yep. Wonderful show, local show. It's kind of historic.
And you had Victor with you.
Oh, my dear Victor Hayden. Yeah.
And just me. And I was like, what am I doing here? Yeah.
See, I don't, my memory of that isn't
exactly
that,
because.
But is your memory good about that?
I remember.
Do you remember much about the show?
I remember them asking what my first record I owned was.
Oh, and what was that,
Kip? I think it was, I had to make it up, I think. It was probably I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, you were so young,
that
too.
Makes sense.
The first record I bought with my own money was Alone with Dion album.
Yeah.
I saved up for my album. It's a picture of Dion with some girl behind him and her arms and pink gloves. You know the picture?
Yeah, sure.
It's so fabulous. So what was your first record that you bought with your own money?
My own money. That's a good question.
Yeah.
This was great. My mom, all through the Beatles days, you know, I was a Beatlehead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mom, take us to the drive-in to see Hard Day's Night. We saw it 15 times, probably.
Yeah.
Same with Help.
Yeah.
You know, take us to the drive.
What a good mom.
She was great.
Yeah.
She still is great.
Yes, she is.
She's visiting us.
I got to have dinner with her last week.
That's right. That's right. First time you met.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my other sister, Andrea and Tammy. Hi, guys.
That was fun.
And Jenna. Hi, Jenna, my niece. Yes. So anyway. Yeah.
First
record. No, so every holiday, like Christmas or Easter, my mom would hide a Beatle record from me in the backyard, like for searching for eggs, but I'd be searching for the latest Beatle record.
Oh my gosh, that is so cute and so cool.
Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
But, you know, first record I ever bought, God, that's a
you
good
don't one. Remember?
It was probably Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I remember going to the Thrifty at Topanga and Ventura and buying it.
I know the neighborhood well.
Yeah.
Thrifty is where I used to go with my mom and get our ice cream cones. We had a Thrifty right here in Reseda too.
They used to have like the two-row record section.
Yeah,
And I remember the smell. I work a record store now, right? And they don't smell the same, but the shrink wrap used to have this smell, that 60s smell.
Yeah.
I love it.
There was my record store up the street. It's on Reseda right at Sherman Way, on Sherman Way right at Reseda Boulevard, right next to the theater where I used to see Elvis movies and then the Beatles movies. Yeah. But it was called the Reseda Record Rack, and it's a tiny little thing.
Huh.
And it's still there exactly the way it was. It turned into a TV, you know, fix it joint. And my dream was to buy that, turn it into a record store again. But I don't know if it's the neighborhood for it. But wouldn't that just be so cool where I bought all my records? I got 40 cents a week allowance, and I saved up for all my records on my 45s, but the Dion album was just
that corner was happening back in the 60s.
Yes, it was.
Remember the giant donut?
Oh, was it there?
No, that was, yeah, it was right there with
on
the gas
corner?
Station. Yeah.
Oh my God, Kim,
yeah,
I don't remember.
Oh yeah, there's a giant donut place.
Well I may have been gone by then, because I left Reseda in 69 or something.
It was there in the early 60s.
God.
I remember.
I remember that.
Yeah. I don't think I'm totally crazy.
I wonder if we ever bumped into each other as children.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious that I'm sitting here talking to you after, you know, reading about you in Cream. And it's hilarious that
we've known each other for 25 years.
We're great
years.
Friends now. It's hilarious. It's like, wow.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I think it's break time. Let's take a little break.
We need to talk about our Dean thing.
Dean Martin?
No, we're obsessed with James Dean.
Yes, that's.
And that really got us very, very close.
Yeah.
So Kip had his own record store called Ear Candy on Sepulveda.
Van Nuys.
Which was so cool.
Thank you.
He, you know, if you ever want to know anything about any records, especially classic stuff.
We'll try.
Kip knows a lot. And with James Dean, he's the go-to guy. He and David Lohr, at the James Dean Gallery in Fairmount, Indiana, you're the two go-to guys.
Thank you.
And there are people who try to usurp them. Look out. Nobody can do it. Nobody can be more knowledgeable about James Dean than Kip or Dave.
Well, thank you. That's sweet of you.
It's the truth.
Well, thanks. I've been writing a book for like 30 some odd years
now. Yes, yes. So we reconnected when I decided I was going to learn how to write screenplays 25 years ago. I'd already had a couple books out, and I was going to, I needed a good topic. And I thought James Dean, who I had worshipped from the time I was, the moment he died, I heard it on the radio. And
you kept a picture of him in your wallet, right?
Oh yeah, a picture of his grave site.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to go visit it my whole life. But I was obsessed with him. I compared all the boys in junior high to him, and it was, no one measured up, my God. And, but I was asleep in the car when that happened and came on the radio, and I sat up and said, who is James Dean? I remember it so vividly. I don't remember a lot about being that young. I was 8 or 9, 55. I had just turned 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as if you don't know, but
5 plus, yeah.
Uh-huh. I just turned 9, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and I was so young. I don't. And I was so young and tender to be crazy about him, and I started collecting the magazines, all the, you know, there were tons of James Dean magazines at that point when he died.
Yeah
And I would set my alarm and get up in the middle of the night to see Rebel Without a Cause. That's the only way you could do
that's right, there's no VHS.
People think, you know, it's the olden times.
Yeah, you had to wait till it came on TV.
Yes, you had to wait.
That's right.
And I'd get up at 2 a.m., whether it was a school night or not, and I would watch that movie and wait till he had his head in her lap. And she said, I love somebody. It was oh, God. I was crazed.
That didn't have the same effect on me, but...
But what, how, why were you attracted to him?
No, I remember in high school, I was, again, I didn't really notice him until, like, I think the early 70s, I started running ads for 50s music on TV, like, get the greatest hits on vinyl or whatever.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they would always show a picture of him with the sweater pulled up around his,
oh, yeah,
over his mouth.
Yeah,
the torn sweater.
Yeah,
and I was like, who is that
sweater
guy?
Series.
Yeah, who is that guy? And then Rebel came on TV. So Rebel was the first one I saw, and I just thought, and you know, I mean, he's a teenager, supposed to be a teenager. And,
yeah,
you know, the parents, the problems with the parents and stuff. I just go, wow, this is real. This guy's real.
Mm.
And anyway, I just really, matter of fact, in high school, I did a scene from Rebel. Yeah.
Oh my God, I wish that was on film.
Well, it must have been really funny because there was supposed to be another person in the scene, but it was just me doing it as a monologue.
Oh.
Yeah. The stair scene with his dad, you know.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so I did that, and I'm glad it's not on film, but I did okay.
You kill your own father.
Yes.
No one was gonna yell that out. Huh?
Yeah.
But that's the scene.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what got me into it. And then I 1 year, somebody gave me a calendar, and it had a picture of Jimmy standing next to his Porsche, the Porsche he died in,
yeah,
at a gas station. And this was a long time ago. This is before anybody had seen that photo, and I'd never seen it. And I said, I got to find that. And that led me on a quest to find location after location, yeah, where they took. This is before internet, okay?
Yeah.
Nowadays everybody just pops on and types in, yeah, and you can find it. But back then I spent so much gas money driving around LA and doing detective work, and
I
found all that stuff, and I found the gas station, which was ironically across the street from where I worked.
Yeah.
Moby Disc.
Yeah.
Record store.
Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, so that led me into, like, I was doing I wanted to do a book, a location book.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got a computer. And the computer, I started, this 10 pages turned into 20, into 100, into 200. And then I decided to do a day by day on its life. And now I'm like 30 years later.
I know, it's an incredible work of devotion and love and amazing information, Kip.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
I mean, but because he goes, like, he'll take some person who was in a TV show with Jimmy, and of course all his friends call him Jimmy, by the way, And you will take that actor, say, name some actor.
Yeah, it's like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yes, it is. And he'll follow that actor's.
Well, I'll have their birth date, then I'll have their death date, so you get to find out what happened.
Yeah.
But their credits.
Yeah, there's usually a little bit of information about anyone Jimmy ever came in contact with in his entire life.
Exactly. So it's kind of grown. It's like, I hope people give a crap.
It's an amazing history of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And that from that era too. I mean, right? There's very few books that go that in depth.
Yeah, and the history of Fairmount as well, the town he's from, and Marion and all of that kind of stuff. And it goes up till today, you know, everything that has a James Dean connection.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
That's why he can't finish it.
I can't finish
it. Because things keep happening. People who knew Jimmy, because he would be what, 92.
I should know that off the top
91.
Of my head.
He would be 91 now, right?
Yeah.
I thought you said you had great math. You figured out my age.
I lied.
He would be 91. He was born in 31.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. That's right.
And so many of the people in his life are gone or going or about to go. So this is going to be quite an important book, I think. I've always thought so, but it's way too long. It's already 1,200 pages.
So I would imagine. Yeah.
He's going to have two, what do they call
volumes?
Two volumes, everybody. Two volumes, Day by Day with James Dean.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the title, maybe. Day After Day.
Day After Day? Yeah. That's nice.
That's my tribute to Badfinger as well.
Okay.
It was one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. So then you decided you had to go to Fairmount.
Yeah. So I became friends with the lady, Sylvia, who ran the fan club. And she lived out in Fullerton. And she was planning on going to Fairmount with these two other girls. And I said, well, can I tag along too? I'd love to go. And you guys have been there before, so you can introduce me to people. I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And that was like 88 or 89. Mm-hmm. And so I was late going because, you know, the 50s and 60s, I missed all of that, 70s.
Oh, I wanted to go too because, like you mentioned, I carried his gravestone around in my wallet in junior high. And I knew one day I would get there. And you went back in 99, right?
I can't remember exactly. I have to look in my book.
It's 99, I believe.
Yeah.
Might be 2000.
Is that the one that... I brought you with me?
Yeah.
That was a heck of
a
trip.
I know. I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
We listened to, that's when I was right in the thick of writing this screenplay. I was writing a screenplay. You know, I was going to write a book, and I realized there are way too many books about Jimmy already. And so I was going to write this screenplay and about his friendship with a lady named Toni Lee Scott, who was a jazz singer. In the 50s, young jazz singer. And she lost her leg in a motorcycle accident when she was 21 years old, just really on the verge of happening, and had a lot of surgeries and was really trying to make sort of a comeback. And she ran into James Dean at Googie's, which was a hangout on Sunset where he used to meet his friends. And I just thought it was such an interesting story because he was trying to help her. He wanted to encourage her to get back on stage. And they both couldn't stand Hollywood, and they really connected. And it's an amazing story. So that's what I was working on when we went to Fairmount.
You remember, though, that there wasn't much information on Toni that you didn't know. And then
she was called the one-legged gal pal in the really bad James Dean books.
Do you remember driving and then you said, and I said, oh, yeah, that's Toni Lee Scott. Yes. And
I was thrilled.
You know who she is?
He knew her name and everything. I said, who is this one-legged gal pal?
Yeah.
And a friend of ours who was more versed in computers than we were at that time found her on there. And we went to visit her. And I just spoke to her 2 days ago. We are still friends to this day. And I really, if anyone's out there interested in my screenplay, It's a true story about James Dean, man, that people don't know. So contact me.
Dig.
Yeah. It's really a fascinating story.
So that trip to Indiana was fascinating. I introduced you to Dave and Lenny, I think, or that you talked to them on.
Yeah, we met on the phone, I think.
Right.
right? Or was it maybe an email? We exchanged, and he was just so thrilled we were coming to visit. Dave Lohr started the James Dean Gallery. His story is so incredible. He's got a fabulous book out himself.
Yeah.
So please read Dave Lohr's book. You can buy it at the James Dean Gallery. And he tells the story of the New Yorkers, he and his boyfriend Lenny. They're now married. I married them. That was one of my favorite days.
Yeah.
They moved from New York to this tiny little podunk town. And they got some shit, man, when they first moved there. But now they are the gentlemen of the small town, you know, who take care of the James Dean's legend. It's a wonderful book, and it's a wonderful story.
And by the way, that town, Podunk, whatever, we love that.
Podunk. Town. Yeah, I call Podunk just means small, right? Small town. I'm not saying it in a negative way.
Yeah, we love that town. It's so chill and relaxing when we go, you know.
The main street looks the same pretty much. I mean, it's changed some, but it's still got the bank and a lot of pictures of Jimmy on that street, Main Street in Fairmount. You can still see exactly where he walked. And I was so thrilled to be there finally. It's just...
I took a lot of pictures of you laying on the grave.
Yes, yes, I would lay on Jimmy's grave. The only time I've ever had that thing happen that people talk about, going up the back of your neck, that like ants crawling up the back, was at Jimmy's grave.
Yeah.
I really believe his spirit is rarely close to people who are interested in communing with him. I had so many dreams about him when I was writing that screenplay. He showed me who he is in so many different ways. And I felt like I knew him. And I think a lot of people feel that way. So do you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people feel, they feel a connection with him like no other, really. People, I guess there may be Marilyn, Elvis, and James Dean are the three like Hollywood icons that people will always know about and want to know more about.
Yeah.
These people that had who were friends of James Dean's who hadn't seen each other since he died.
Fantastic.
It was one of the most amazing situations we have ever found ourselves in. Leonard Rosenman, who did the music for East of Eden.
And Rebel.
Such beautiful music, so far out. He was so far ahead of everybody. And we got him together with Jimmy's agent and his best friend.
And they were his best friend.
Frank Mazzola, one of the guys who was in the Rebel. And we had a dinner party. Did I get everybody?
Yeah, Lou Bracker.
Yeah, Lou Bracker was his best friend. And he's got a great book. The best book on James Dean is called Jimmy and Me by Lou Bracker.
Yeah.
And it's sincere and it's real. And it's not full of crap.
Right. And Frank Mazzola was one of the gang members in Rebel.
And they were all at my house for dinner. And they were talking about Jimmy's death.
After dinner, we're listening to them talk. And they're talking about, Lou says to Leonard or vice versa, they said, you know, it's the first time we've ever talked about Jimmy's death together. You know, and this was like 40 years later, or whatever.
Yes, it was many, many, many years.
Pamela and I looked at each other and just went, wow.
I know, we were in the middle of this. Because if you're a James Dean nut, and especially if you just decide you are, right? People glom onto him like they're they know him better than anyone else and they understand him. And it's the rebellious nature and also the fact that he was so, his heart was open, man. He just, he changed acting for men, for sure. He made it okay for men to be vulnerable and express themselves like no one ever before. Brando and Clift were his heroes, but he took it further than that. And so people felt that, and they still do. They come to Fairmount, new people all the time. And they think they know Jimmy better than anyone else. It's really kind of interesting, bizarre. But there we were with all the people who actually knew him, and it was just
mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was mind-blowing.
Two of them have since passed on, though, sadly. We got the chance to
three.
Well, Lou's still around, but
Dick Clayton isn't, Dick, and Mazzola isn't, and Leonard Rosenman.
Oh, three, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So it was really incredible. And Leonard Rosenman did that stunning music for East of Eden. Whenever we pull into Fairmount,
Da, da, you pop on the CD.
And you know, if you're in love with James Dean, it never stops. And Kip, in his way, is in love with James Dean, aren't you, Kip?
Yeah, of course. In the town, I love everything about around him.
Yes,
it's just great.
It really is. Great. We've thought of living there, and you know, one day if I sell the script, I'm definitely going to buy a house there.
And I'll rent.
He'll rent a room from me.
That's right. I'm looking forward to our trip in September. We're going again.
Yes, we go every year, sometimes twice a year. My last book, Let It Bleed, I wrote a lot of it there. I rented a little house in Fairmount. It's a dream is to, I've promised James Dean that if I sell this screenplay, I'll buy a house there. I've been trying to sell it for a long time. So anybody out there want to read it? So Kip started doing James Dean trips around Hollywood.
Tours to
show people where all, he found out where all the places were. And now for a long time, has been taking people to the James Dean sites.
You know, doing private tours and what have you. And so what that led to.
Yes, it led to when I the way my tours started, my rock and roll tours, but I'm with the band tours. I got an email out of the blue from some British guy whose best friend was turning 40. And he said, we one up each other on our birthdays. And I would like to hire you to take us around to the sites. And I'm with the band because I think that he would really enjoy that. So I said, sure. And he gave me $5,000 to do it. I tell the people on the rock tour now, boy, you guys got a deal.
Yeah.
Spending the day with me. I originally got $5,000. They also took me out to dinner afterwards. Well, they picked me up in Rolls Royce, took me out to dinner at the Polo Lounge afterwards and just peeled off $5,100 bills. I went, okay, maybe this is something I can add to my repertoire of a billion ways I make a living. And that's how that happened. And the first person I thought of to drive it is Kip, because he was already doing these tours. So it's worked out so well.
Yeah, we've done it since
13 years.
Yeah.
Huh? 13 Amazing. Years. We've been taking full vans full of people all from everywhere. And I read out of my books and tell stories. And if any of you are interested, they sell out really fast.
Yeah,
we have one in July. It's sold out. And one in September is coming up too.
You guys need to take it. It's a lot of fun.
It is fun. And Kip really makes it.
Oh,
yeah.
Aren't you sweet?
Yeah, but it's so true. I don't know if I could do it without it now. He's got his own stories he tells because he's full of Hollywood lore.
Next one, $50,000, please.
People from out of town. We've had Australians, Canadians,
all over the place,
all kinds of Europeans.
Yeah.
And their main draw nowadays is Laurel Canyon. That's where they want to know all about it. They want to take it all in. It's become mythology, these rock gods from the 60s and early 70s. It's like the Mick Jagger people think about, dream about, is not the one who's wonderfully still performing. It's the one, you know, Sympathy for the Devil or even earlier. Yeah. They think about that guy. And Jim Morrison, who's no longer with us, that he's become just revered and worshipped in such a weird way, and I always have to pop their bubble a little bit. I point out where he, you know, used to try to rest in the gutter in front of the whiskey.
Rest. You mean just passed out? Resting.
He was resting.
Yeah.
He wanted to take a little nap. I remember one night watching him do that. He curled up, and you know what it reminded me of, which I've mentioned to you. Is
the opening of Rebel?
Yeah, the opening of Rebel.
Yeah.
He curled up like James Dean did at the end, you know,
with the monkey. Wind up
right
monkey.
In front of the whiskey go-go in the gutter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow.
Hey, let's talk about new music. Music we listen to now. Have you heard Måneskin?
Yeah, I have a crush on the female bass player. She's cute.
You know, they're all 23 years old.
Oh, so there's no hope for me? Okay. She's too young. All right, fair enough.
But the yeah, the lead singer is gorgeous, Damiano, right?
I guess,
gorgeous,
yeah, yeah.
Gorgeous people, really exciting young band.
They were on Saturday Night Live for some reason, like a few months ago. It's like, who are these guys?
You know? Well, they're huge in Europe. They're
yeah,
really huge.
But out here, it's like, wow.
It's pronounced, it's spelled M-A-N-E-S-K-I-N, if you guys are not familiar with Måneskin. And I recommend that you become familiar with them. Also, of course, Struts, one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they sell records?
Not too much.
That's really a crime.
Yeah.
Kip now works at CD Trader.
In Tarzana.
Yeah.
Where Tarzan was created.
So it's true.
It's true.
Tarzan.
Edgar Rice Burroughs lived there and created
it. Kip showed me his house the other day. It was
created
fascinating.
The town of Tarzana.
Kip is so full of knowledge.
Yeah, it's never makes me any money, though.
Let's just dig into your knowledge.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you really knowledgeable about?
History of Hollywood. And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Rock.
So much.
I love all that stuff.
When we go on our tours, he will show things. One of my favorites is he points out the spot where Fred Mertz dropped dead on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. And everybody always goes, ooh, he says, any I Love Lucy fans? And so, sometimes there are.
He dropped dead.
He dropped dead. And then he'll point out the window where Sunset Boulevard was being filmed, the opening scene.
Yeah, with William Holden.
William Holden typing.
The crane shot going up into his room. Yeah, that building's still there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
rare.
Once in a while on the rock tour, Pamela's rock tour, I always throw in little Hollywood stuff. They seem to like it.
Yeah, they do. They do. And it takes a little bit of pressure off me for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because on those tours, I am on.
Yeah.
I might as well be on stage.
We're both pretty wiped
out. All those.
Yeah. At the end of the day.
It is so exhausting. Yeah. But we have such a ball.
It is.
Such a great time.
It's a great time. Yeah. So anyway, I guess I could talk about the Holly Berries. I did besides Christmas, I did a summer song. Because of summer, you know, I love the Beach Boys. So it's a Ramones-y kind of song called Boards and Bikinis Rule down in Malibu. And my friend Ed Stasium was kind enough to master it. And Ed Stasium either produced or engineered all of that Ramones, all those classic songs. And he co-produced our Little Girls record. So yeah. I got to meet him then. So he was nice enough to do me a favor, and he mixed and mastered that that Holly Berry song for me and added some guitar as well.
Yeah.
Ed Stasium, he's an unsung hero. He played a lot of Ramones guitar licks on a lot of those records. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's hear that.
Yeah, so let's hear Boards and Bikinis Rule down in Malibu.
Did you love the beach party movies?
Love the beach party movies. And I just bought a box set the other day of DVD, all of the Frankie and Annette, all of the classic American International pictures.
Yeah.
I love those. Love those movies.
Did you have a crush on Annette?
Yeah, I did.
She was stacked. And she always, it was very intimidating to girls who weren't stacked.
Truth be told, though, I was more interested in some of the other bikini girls on the beach dancing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. The blondes, especially.
Yeah. He likes blondes.
I like them all, but blondes are good. So tell me about what kind of music you're listening to.
You're going to interview me too, Kip.
That's what I'm asking.
Okay. Well, the fact is, I just saw Dylan the other night. And he did the most of Rough and Rowdy Ways, his most recent record. And it is so, he was in such fine voice. It's like, maybe he's I don't know, it was like angelic in places. And you could understand most of the words. And, you know, a lot of times you can't, which doesn't bother me, because to me, he's the god of rock and roll, the guy who made it important.
Did he do any of his old hits, though? Like reconstituted?
He reimagined some. Yeah, he did Gotta Serve Somebody.
Okay.
Which was really cool. He did it in a whole different way. He turns them into reggae and stuff like that. He ships them all around, but that was great to hear.
Huh. And he did that Kennedy song?
No, that's too long.
Oh.
The Kennedy song was Dylan's first number one single at age 80.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Where were you when JFK got shot?
Oh, my God. I was at Cleveland High. Wait a minute. What year was it?
63, November.
Yeah, I was in my first year at Cleveland High, and I was walking, you know, to my next class, and I knew something weird had happened.
Yeah.
And then we got into school and got to go home.
Yeah, I was in second grade at St. Mel's on the Victory, DeSoto and Ventura, and the nuns came in. They were all crying.
Oh,
like, God. What's going on? You guys are get to go home now because the president's been shot. I was like, and so that whole weekend, just that's all you saw on TV.
Of course, that was really everybody old enough to remember that can remember that awful moment.
Yeah.
But that song, the Dylan song, is so incredible.
Yeah,
it's one of his longest songs, and it went to number one.
I have a question. I wanted to ask you this earlier. What's the craziest thing that happened while you were on the road with the little girls, if anything?
Well, we never toured, really, sadly. The shock, the farthest we got was San Francisco. We never went back east. We always regretted that, but, you know, we didn't have any money. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and the record was put out by ourselves, you know, and so, yeah, we never toured. And then the little girls, I think the farthest we got was Arizona. We opened for the Pretenders.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. We actually felt like celebrities because we had a dressing room with actual catered food. It was and beer, and it was just awesome because you're used to playing these little clubs in LA and like bathrooms almost, you know.
Yeah. And what happened with the little girls?
Girls are. I'm still in contact with them. They sang on Boards and Bikinis Rule that you just heard, by the way. Karen and Michelle. Hi, Karen and Michelle.
Hi, girls.
Yeah. Still friends with them. And hopefully we can record again soon because I'm trying to finish some more Holly Berry stuff that we never finished a while ago. And so they're in the can. But anyway, Karen lives in Maine and Michelle lives up in Canyon Country, I think. Yeah.
Well, didn't you just write the liner notes for?
Yeah, so we got a CD coming out.
Yeah.
In Australia, it's like a compilation of our stuff. And since I'm the kind of historian of the group, I have photos and I created these liner notes with the factual stuff about everything, you know. I hope, like I said, I hope people care. But it was a labor of love. And that's coming out hopefully by Christmas. It's on Playback Records. It's an Australian company, but it'll be distributed in America. And I don't know what the name of it's going to be yet, but it's got a lot of rare stuff on it, folks.
Kip also writes for the James Dean Zine.
And the James Dean Memorial Gallery newsletter.
Yes. He's got a column. He writes about all, like I mentioned earlier, all the people who die.
I'm totally into death, aren't I? Yeah.
No, but you know, people who knew Jimmy, come on, they're pretty old.
Yeah, true.
But it's what's it called? It's called West Coastin'.
That's the column, yeah.
All you James Dean fans, you should sign up for these Dean zines.
Yeah, you guys should
join the James Dean fan club. We're a bunch of kooks.
And go to the jamesdeangallery.com, I think it is, and the Fairmount Historical Museum also has a website. I think they might be called the James Dean Museum now. But both of those support them, you know. And maybe we'll see you guys in Fairmount.
Yes. Please join us in September. I dance every year with Lenny Prusak, Dave's husband. and we...
It's a 50s dance contest.
Yes, yeah, a 50s dance contest, and we rehearse and rehearse, and then it's swing dancing. And actually, you can see us. We're all over YouTube.
It's one of the highlights of the festival.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I guess it was probably, 15 years ago, I just grabbed Lenny. I always sit in his booth. He sits, it's a festival. Every September, the last weekend of September is a festival to commemorate, actually, his death day.
Well, yeah, and the history of Fairmont as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
but it's a memory, yeah, to remember James Dean. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on.
It's like a carnival atmosphere.
Yeah. But the one of the highlights is the dance contest, and we won a few times. We actually came in first only once in the fast, once in the slow, and came in second many times.
Yeah, and you guys are the highlight all the time.
Well, in our little group, yeah.
Yeah.
But we do pretty well.
Yeah, just talking about it, I'm excited. But anyway, yeah.
How can people find you, Kip?
I have a Facebook page. Just find me on Facebook and
Kip Brown.
Yeah, Kip Brown. You can't miss me. I have a black hat on. I always wear a black hat. And
he's really cute.
I'm adorable.
He's also Holly Berry Kip on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And find me, you can see my shock or the little girls. We have little girls videos. Some of our, it sounds funny when I say that.
I know.
On YouTube, you know, some of our live performances. We did a USA Network show once, and you can see that all on YouTube. And Holly Berry stuff is on there as well.
When Christmas comes, you'll hear a lot more of the Holly Berries.
Yeah, baby. And you can also get my record, the Holly Berry's EP, which is awesome. It's like, I had it designed to look like a 60s EP, and that's on eBay. You can find those on eBay.
Okie dokie.
Hi, bye, everybody.
Kip. Well, dolls, thank you for listening. That was my dear friend, Kip Brown. And please join us on a rock tour sometime. And thank you for listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party, a Pantheon podcast extravaganza.
Listening to Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party, produced by Aaron Alden and Christian Swain. All sound design by Jerry Danielson and Busy Signal Studios. Find Miss Pamela at Pamela DeBar on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Find all the Pantheon podcasts at pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you find great podcasts. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pantheonpodcasts, Rock and Roll Archaeology on Instagram, and Pantheon Pods on Twitter. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.